Hey there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9 with the WPF team. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
Sure, I'm Uni Raindranathan, and I'm a program manager working on WPF, Visual Studio, XAML tools, things like that.
Cool.
And I'm Rob Relier, I'm a software engineer working on WPF.
Okay. I'm Harikrishna Menon, I'm a program manager working on WPF.
All right, so I'm going to start right off the bat with a tweet I got 2 days ago, or that I saw. And I'm going to read it to you, and I want to get your reaction. The tweet is as follows. It says, "Unless I'm wrong, there's no modern API to make Windows desktop apps. WPF is in maintenance mode. WinForms is dead. MFC deprecated. WinRT is metro only. Now, we're not going to comment on all the other stuff, but what do you say about WPF and in the context of this?
So first of all, I think we should put WPF in the big picture of where it is today. Like, it is actually the UI framework of choice for like a number of large mission critical apps today, and we see that not to change anytime in the near future. So to call it in maintenance mode is a little bit of a bummer, but like let's be sure, like, we are going to make WPF better. We are going to listen to our customers. We're going to make sure that it remains a relevant choice for building mission critical apps, and that's where we are, and that's where we will be.
That's awesome. So what's new that we can talk about today?
Sure. I mean, we're going to see a lot of demos today, and Hari and Rob are going to walk us through a bunch of those things. First of all, we should say we're going to look at a couple of things. We're going to see things that are there in .NET 4.6 today. Okay. At least we're going to talk about that. And then we're going to see things that we are thinking about going forward. The most important thing that we're doing right now is we're building sort of like the foundational block that allows us to sort of quickly address customer feedback. We're not there today. WPF is used widely, so that's a good thing,
right?
But that's also a bad thing, because it's really hard for us to change anything without breaking an app, right? Like, it's a system-wide component, and it's super hard for us to make changes. The work we're doing now going forward, at least for the next two to three months, is to make it such that we can evolve WPF to respect and respond to the needs of our customers much more quickly than what we ever could.
So how do you iterate quickly without breaking stuff in the past? Because obviously it's part of the .NET framework, and you can't upgrade the .NET framework every time you want something new.
Yep.
How do you address this in WPF?
Do you want to take that one?
Okay. So what we're looking at for this release now is we're thinking about something called WPF App Local, or we call it WPF Local. What it does is we are trying to ship WPF platform assemblies in a NuGet package. This allows customers to take a dependency on the NuGet package. It allows us to release at a faster cadence. And because they are explicitly taking a dependency on that, it's not going to break any other applications on the system.
Oh, so let me see if I understand. In essence, it's like you're shipping WPF inside of the bin directory, more or less. So that way, if you do make a change or if something is new, all you have to do is change the assembly in there. What assemblies are those, and how do you do that?
So at this point, we're looking at multiple approaches. The current thing we are pursuing is we're shipping all platform assemblies in the NuGet package. We might be in the future be able to ship only the ones that we have changed. But we need to figure out, based on size, performance considerations, as well as how CLR likes it to be, like how many assemblies to ship.
Yeah, there's three big ones, Windows Base, Presentation Core, Presentation Framework. Those are definitely in. For versioning reasons, because they're all part of the .NET framework, it's likely that we're going to also need to include all the theme DLLs and a bunch of the other ones as well. But those three are the vast majority of the size anyway.
Yeah. Our approach allows us to scale to sort of, let's say, include native WPF DLLs as well. Uh-huh. But we think, based on at least at the top of a backlog, the DLLs that we have in place are the ones that allow us to address the items at the very top of the backlog.
So this is a huge deal, because for those that are thinking that WPF is done, in essence, you're making it so that you can iterate faster, get new stuff out faster, without having a problem with the back compatibility stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we should be super clear. Compatibility is important.
Right.
But what this approach allows us to do is address compatibility based on feedback that we get more quickly.
I see.
It allows us to sort of like, we want to make sure that this thing is very highly compatible with WPF that's today in .NET 4.6. It's just that we can take a little bit more risk, get feedback quickly, and address that without actually having to wait for a whole deployment of .NET to go out there.
Yeah, we could add new features. We could remove features if we wanted to. If there was something that was unused and we could get a big gain from removing something old, we could do that. because only those applications that take advantage and opt in to WPF local would have to deal with that.
So this is not only a mechanism to get stuff out quicker, but also to get feedback back quicker and to be able to iterate more powerfully and more quickly.
One thing I would add to that is that we want to still keep the app local version as compatible with the inbox version as possible,
okay,
because we want to target maximum adoption. So if you start removing a bunch of things, the slice of the pie, the customers can actually adopt it becomes smaller and smaller, right? So we want to make sure that maximum adoption is our number one of big priorities, and we'll try maintaining that so that we have the same compatibility with the inbox version of WPF.
Awesome. Do you have any demos with app local?
Absolutely. So let's start with a simple app. So I have a stock ticker application. All it does is talk to Yahoo, shows a bunch of stocks for the last 12 months. As you can see, I'm going to expand references. And let's take a look at all the references. So presentation framework is a WPF reference. When I select it, you can see the paths reference is from program files, reference assemblies. And when I actually F5 the application, let's take a look at where presentation framework was loaded.
So this application actually has a bit of a delay in it before you're debugging your timeline demo later on.
Exactly. So. Yeah, it's an induced issue right now. So we'll take a look at that once we get to tooling. So I'm going to wait for the application to load, switch back to Visual Studio, and let's take a look at the list of assemblies. Let's take a look at presentation framework, and let's see where it's loaded from. If you look at the path, it's actually getting loaded from the GAC, exactly as you would expect for most WPF applications.
Right.
Now I'm going to take this application and convert it into an app local application, a WPF local application. And I can show you how easy it is, how it's like almost instant change. I don't have to do much. I don't have to change my API surface, nothing. I'm going to stop debugging. Go back to references, right click, manage NuGet packages. I have a local repository already created. You can see a bunch of WPF local packages here. I'm going to select the x86 version. By the way, the reason we have x86 version and x64 version, I mean, trying to unify it at some point, is presentation core needs to be in x86 and x64 because they have slightly some native code in it.
Right.
But you don't really see it when you're doing a normal WPF app because GAC actually allows it.
So there have been some people who have asked questions since last week's announcement here whether or not it'd be possible to have any CPU version and distribute both presentation cores. It probably is possible with assembly probing, but we don't have that built in right now, but we've got it on our list.
So eventually this is going to be on NuGet then?
Yes.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. So selected app local, WPF local, going to hit install. We do have a bunch of scripts that does a couple of things, and we'll get that in detail really soon.
So this actually is taking longer on this machine than other machines, but...
Yeah, I think it's because of the network. I don't have a LAN connected right now.
It's okay. We forgot to pay homage to the demo god. But as it's loading, there are some questions here while we're doing that. One is from... Shagigi, will WPF be able to call the new APIs for low-level hardware drivers mentioned recently at WinHEC?
You could always, from time immemorial, from .NET, be invoked into any Windows API that you're sort of running on. So I don't know the specifics of the drivers or the APIs being talked about here, but you absolutely can call into any Windows API that I'm aware of. So. The question is, and there's another question I'm seeing there as well, like, how are we going to make it easy for people to sort of like call into, like, you know, let's say WinRT APIs if you want to light up your app better on Windows 10? I think we're working through the story there as well.
Cool.
But absolutely, any Win32 API should be callable from your WPF application.
All right, excellent. Is it downloaded?
Okay, it's done now. So let's take a look at VS now. So my package is installed. I'm going to now take a look at the references. I'm going to select presentation core. And let's look at Spot. It's actually referencing from my local project folder. So we have updated the references to take the references from NuGet package instead of the installed version of WPF.
Okay.
There's a couple of more things I want to show you before I F5. I'm going to unload this app, unload this project, going to edit the CSproj, and I'm going to show you what we changed in your CSproj to achieve this, right? We basically added two new properties. The first one I've selected, it's called Auto Generate Bindings Redirect. This allows us to generate assembly binding redirects for the WPF assemblies, saying that, hey, if you're from version X to Y, go use our NuGet package version. So that way, we're able to change that.
So they're basically able to tell that, hey, you put the same DLL that's part of the .NET framework lately. It's marked with a different version number greater than 4.0, and it will automatically generate these things in .exe.config to redirect to the newer version, the local version. We'll take a look at that in a little bit.
The second one that we do is we have added a reference to a build task assembly. We need a custom compiler. We'll come to that why we need a custom XAML compiler for WPF, because some new features requires addition to the compiler. Right. And we have basically said, hey, go use this one instead of the one that's installed in the GAC. Mm-hmm. So those are two changes that we have made to CS Proj. And there are a bunch of references that get added as part of NuGet. Let's take a look at that as well. And for example, here you can see there is a reference, include presentation core, load this version, and the hint path is also given here. So that is mostly all the changes that we do to a CS proj when you add a reference to your Git package.
And this is just like regular cleaning up after you change an assembly out. I mean, there's nothing crazy going on here.
Nothing. So I'm going to reload this app. Now, just going to do a quick rebuild. Great. And I'm going to F5. I think the startup project got changed. Oh. I'm going to set the startup project to stock ticker again.
I do that every time, man.
It's going to unload every it. Time. I think it just switched up. Yeah. So as you can see, the application started up. It's going to take a bit of time for the whole network thing to figure itself out. Yeah, the application's loaded. I'm going to switch back to Visual Studio. And let's take a look at presentation framework now. You can see that it's getting loaded from your local bin directory.
So bin debug presentation framework.dll, that's great.
Exactly, so it's that easy. Just add a NuGet and you're all done. A couple of things that so this is it. And one thing you want to notice also is my stock ticker application has references to third-party assemblies like Telerik. All of them work well together. We have such high compatibility that we're just redirecting your platform assemblies to use our version. But all the references, everything now works really well in this environment. So it's pretty seamless for most customers to do this change. And we're going to show you an awesome demo in some time that's going to prove to you how easy it is to retarget a giant application to WPF app lookup.
So theoretically, I mean, moving forward, if you have a WPF app and it's time to go to the next version whenever that comes out, it's literally a question of downloading a NuGet package, swapping out the Windows, all those other assemblies. I don't know, you mentioned three of them. And it should just work.
Yes, in most cases, yes.
Yeah, I mean, we'll be smart about the cadence in which we release these things to prevent a lot of fragmentation. We have to worry about things like servicing and security and things like that. But yeah, it's absolutely. Just download the latest version of the package. Yeah.
Yes. So speaking of servicing, one of the things we're trying to do with WPF Local is make it so that people can jump on to the latest versions and the latest enhancements a couple of years before they might have been able to anyway. If you're building applications and you're targeting, what version of the .NET framework are you targeting? Are you targeting 4.5.1, 4.5.2, 4.5, 4.0, 4.6? So here, what our current thought is that you'll be targeting 4.5.1 or later of the .NET framework, and then you can choose to use effectively WPF 4.6 with some enhancements as well. So you get a couple year jump being able to take advantage of new features that we're doing.
That's pretty remarkable. I mean, because I can understand how hard it is to update WPF when the framework only gets updated every year or so, maybe every 2 years. Mm-hmm. And so being able to iterate this quickly is pretty amazing. All right, so a couple of questions. Oh, go ahead, Harry.
I had one thing to clarify when we talked about 4.5.1 specifically, right? The reason that we are so interested in 4.5.1 is these are platform assemblies. Like there's some native code if you ship or native DLLs. What if there's a security issue we want to patch? It is very important that we're able to patch it. We don't want unpatched versions lying around. The .NET from 4.5.1 has an ability that allows us to even patch app local binaries, provided you have Microsoft Update enabled. So it's very important that you have 4.5.1 running on the machine when you use WPF local, because we can then successfully patch your machine in an event of a security change.
Yeah, the way that works is the application's running with those app local assemblies. It effectively leaves a little cookie around saying, hey, I'm using these assemblies, that Microsoft Update can go check when it's checking for updates. And it says, hey, Presentation Core, WPF Local, that first version has a fix. Let's go ahead and put it in the GAC, and it will be loaded instead of the local copies, and so we'll be able to go ahead and service.
That's pretty amazing, yeah. Because now there's a security problem that can get updated because then you don't have to wait for the framework, but also you can get the latest and greatest whenever you want. All right, so let's go to some questions. There's a question about from Stefan. What is the approximate size of the NuGet package?
It's anywhere between. It depends on the previous question. Right. Like Rob said, right? We still need to figure out whether it's 3 assemblies or 10 assemblies or the entire set.
I see.
But we believe it's anywhere going to be 11 to 16 megabytes.
And that's not too bad. I mean, that's the entire WPF stuff. Cool. Yeah. All right.
So actually, can we show? I want to show injection.
Yes.
Is that a good time?
It's probably, yeah. Then we can
let's do it.
Then we'll come back to a quick question. Yeah. Actually, we'll swap
let's
over.
Swap over here real quick.
So what Hari showed was a NuGet package to go ahead and take advantage of WPF Local. What I'm doing here is I'm running a little app that I wrote called WPF Local Console. And it takes a look at a couple different applications, and it's looking at WPF version identifier targeting just the normal .NET framework. I can go ahead and launch that. The code it has pretty much just looks at the version of the presentation framework loaded in the process. And prints out the version number. And of course, this is .NET 4.6, but it's assembly version 4.0. I can click on this button to copy and inject WPF Local. What it does is it's copying, it basically, this was the first thing. It had an .exe and an .exe config. And I just copied that, and then I injected WPF Local into that application that was targeting the normal .NET framework. So in order to do that, what we did is we dropped in a WPF local assemblies directory. If I open that up, it's got that full set of assemblies in there. I'll jump back up. It's got the .exe, the exact same executable we were using a second ago. We didn't even need to retarget. It's targeting, you know, basically WPF 4.5.1. And then there's an .exe config, and my tool injected some things in there. I thought I had the font bigger.
Just the redirects and such, right?
So it adds the redirects here. Actually, it says, hey, go probe for assemblies inside of WPF local assemblies. And it says it twice just to make sure it gets it. Mm-hmm. A little bug in my tool. And then it goes ahead and has this version thing saying if anybody's looking for version 0 to version 400, please load version 400. So when we go ahead and launch that application, there we go.
So
we have that version.
There
running.
Was not even a need for a recompile there.
Exactly.
It was the exact same .exe that just went into the WPF local stuff.
Right. Yes. So that's an option.
I mean, so if anyone is concerned, right, they can take their .exe and whatever other assemblies they have, do a couple edits on their config, click it, and right away see, is this going to work or do we have to do a little bit of extra work?
Exactly. It allows you to quickly test. How awesome is your app going to be on AppLocal, like in terms of compat, without you having to go change your build process, all that stuff.
Right? That's amazing.
Yeah. Even crazier is it works for Visual Studio. Now, we haven't tested it heavily. But here we were pointing to devend.exe, and I can click on swap here, and it will start targeting WPF local. What that did is it copied the WPF local assemblies in, changed the .exe config, added a probing path. We can go ahead and launch. And this version of VS 2015 CTP actually works, all running on basically WPF Local.
Yeah. Attach a debugger, you know?
You want me to prove that it's actually that version?
So things are going to explode, people. Hold on to your hats.
So I can prove it. I will open up. I expected you to trust me, but you know, whatever. We'll go ahead and prove it. So we'll go ahead and use VS 2013 and attach to the other version. I'm sorry, I've got a couple of different versions running. That's a problem. Refresh. There we go. We'll attach to devenv. My fault. My little tools.
By the way, what he's doing right now is he literally just replaced WPF for Visual Studio. And he's proving to you, he's trying to prove to you right now the version of WPF that it's running. I mean, this is...
So Windows base, is being loaded from program files, Visual Studio, Common, IDE, WPF Local Assemblies, Windows Base.
All right,
cool. So there we go.
That's crazy. So the question now of, well, what are we doing with WPF? We are literally like taking it into the future in a faster, more secure way that will work for people's users, right, with using a Windows update and also with moving stuff forward. You can test this. I know I'm not supposed to ask like when, but soonish, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our goal would be to sort of like try to get something out there soon, as in like not. Let's revisit at build and see what we have to say there.
I like it.
So I want to take the opportunity to talk about a couple of other aspects of WPF that we want our customers to know about, right?
Okay.
The first one is performance, right? We are committed to providing a similar or better performance for WPF local, but there are some caveats there. The reason is WPF assemblies that is in the GAC are engined.
Right.
So, and it gives you a huge startup performance gain.
So engine is, build native assemblies, presentation framework.ni.dll is compiled on the machine under C Windows assembly somewhere.
Yeah, and that's what's used by applications when they load WPF, right? And that gives them a huge startup performance boost. But imagine you're shipping your own version of WPF. That means if you want to get the same startup perf and those kind of performance gains, you have to engine your assembly.
Of course.
And we will make sure we provide, guidance, scripts, or even custom actions that can be used in your MSI installers to do this. But, people, there's another problem here, is that a lot of our customers use ClickOnce. And ClickOnce is a platform that people use to create self-updating,
right,
non-admin write kind of based of, installer, right? But Engine requires you to have admin privileges run on the machine. So there is a slight problem here. Like ClickOnce users, we will probably not recommend them to use this in production until we can figure out a solution.
Yeah, we're investigating a number of ways that we can solve that problem, but the first go, it will not be a solved problem right away.
So I don't think there's anything, and there are some other platform changes we might have to do to enable ClickOnce scenarios as well.
Right.
So that is a problem in the V1 version, but definitely we are looking into multiple ways that'll give us the same performance gains in ClickOnce and compared to MSI installers.
Okay.
This probably might apply to any way that you deploy your application that does not require admin privileges, because we need engine requires
admin
privileges.
Yeah, that makes sense.
This is actually one of the reasons why we can't answer your question of when with a very straight face.
Yeah.
There is actually a lot of work that we have to do to make sure that this is a production-ready solution and not necessarily just a proof of concept.
So
we have to figure out what's the right balance between some of these scenarios. Some of these scenarios we can sort of say, hey, we'll address them later.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them we absolutely have to address before we give anything out there for people to use.
That makes sense. So a couple of questions here coming in. What are plans for open sourcing WPF or at least XAML platform as rich as WPF? Other XAML implementations are not on par with what WPF has to offer. Can you answer that?
I mean, no, we certainly cannot answer the other XAML platforms part. But for WPF, the way I think about it is, before we get to talk about open sourcing, there's a bunch of things we have to do. Like app local is sort of like the first step. If we did nothing, it's a system-wide component that you would never be able to change.
Makes sense.
So this is sort of like the first step in allowing people to at least have control over the behavior of the runtime that they would like. And then trying to figure out a way to sort of like evolve the platform that way before we talk anything about it.
That makes sense. So if we were to do it, you have to do this first,
yes,
anyways.
Absolutely.
So great answer. Okay, so did you have something here?
Yeah, one thing that like Uni said was we have, Uni mentioned that during the .NET conference is that we have almost published our backlog. We're telling our customers that this is what we're doing. That's also very important before we go put the, if we want to put WPF open source, we need to develop out in the open. And that's also a step we're doing along with this approach.
I like that.
Let's answer that last question one more time. About app size and
So if it's on the high end, it's going to be 16.
The question is, how much does the app packet size increase if I have to deploy WPF?
And the binaries themselves are 16 megabytes. There might be some compression possible. I haven't tried zipping them up, etc. I think the NuGet package itself was only 4 or 5 meg.
Yes.
So those might be compressible. Maybe you could unpack them on the fly, but your setup could compress them.
Okay. Another question is there a plan to bring dependency injection in WPF as an out-of-the-box feature? I mean, RealDI, like, be able to do constructor or at least property injections in the pages, controls, converters, etc.
With some of the demos we're going to see later in this hour, it's certainly not the top of our backlog right now. So I'd love to hear more specifics on, you know, why it needs to be inbox versus things that can be done today.
My sense is that there's Prism and there's all these other good things. If it were me, I would have you guys work on WPF. You know what I'm saying? Because there's tons of stuff that you have in your backlog from what you're telling me. I'd rather get that done as well. All right, so let's move on. You talked about performance with the app local. Mm-hmm. There is some feeling out there that WPF is a little bit slower than the older technologies. Are we doing anything to address that?
There's a couple of things. One thing that we are also looking at app local, but no promises here, is that Microsoft has a tool called MPGO, which essentially enables you to train your application to perform better in certain scenarios. For example, if I really want to do startup, I could do a number of startup scenarios, run the MPGO tool, which generates a bunch of training data that is embedded into assembly. And when you run Engine on it, it actually makes sure the code pages and stuff are laid out in such a way that, you know, you might be able to get some performance improvement.
That's interesting.
Yes, but we haven't yet completely proved in our labs that we're able to get a significant improvement for specific applications because WPF itself is trained. But there is an opportunity here to train WPF assemblies for your application's needs.
So
not a generic improvement.
Let me see if I understand. So when you engine, it has to burn in, you know, I can go this way or I can go that way. But when you train it, you might be able to optimize for, looks like they really only ever go that way. Mm-hmm. Let's just burn that in first.
Exactly.
They use these 10 controls in their startup scenarios. Let's make sure those controls load really fast.
Versus a system-wide optimization.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's pretty good.
But we still need, you know, it's just it's initial stages of, investigation. We still need to prove how, for the 10 top apps, are we able to get 10 to 20 and working set improvement or not.
Okay.
But we'll hopefully be investigating that further and we'll be able to in the future comment on this much more. We are also doing a couple of other feature improvements and I want to show that, show that feature to you right now.
Let's do that. Let's hook you up. Make sure we get you hooked in there. That way we're all just looking at that. While we're doing that, okay, so while you're hooking it up, there's a question from Al. Is there anything you can say about WPF and DirectX 12, 11? Will you be at build?
It's certainly very important for us to make it such that people writing DX content using DX 12 or DX 11 can successfully or easily host that content in a WPF application. We see that to be a very common scenario, mm-hmm. where you have your Chrome that is built in WPF, and then your content is really DX. So we are investigating ways where we make it much more easy for you to host DX 12 content in our WPF application.
Okay.
And yes, we will be hopefully a little bit more specific at build.
Perfect.
Okay. So I have a pretty simple app. It's just running on basic, inbox WPF. And I'm just going to F5. And let me first show the references to prove that it is loading from the GAC. So I'm just going to F5 right now. Pretty simple app. It's got a bunch of combo boxes, date pickers, toolbars, menus, etc. I have a simple button that gives me the count of elements on this page. I'm going to hit count. It tells me there's 288 elements. For a simple app, that's quite a bit, right?
So that's a logical tree, there's a visual tree, the content templates,
everything
control
put
templates.
So it's an entire set of elements that is now rendered in the application. I'm going to stop debugging now, switch back to Visual Studio, add a reference to a new get package. Select x86, hit install.
So one of the things you foreshadowed here was you showed off the we need a new different debugger, compiler in mm-hmm. the project. And so mm-hmm. we're adding this new feature that's going to require some new xcolon support.
Exactly. So any changes to xcolon and stuff requires us to update our compiler to deal with it because we can do some validations, we have to sometimes do code gen and things like that. So now the install is complete, and you can see that framework is now getting loaded locally. I have to do one more step. It's just a small bug in how we do assembly binding redirects right now. So I'm just going to copy this particular guy I've commented, and move it down to the runtime tag.
So presentation framework.arrow2 is our theme, and that needs to be redirected, and it wasn't automatically being redirected.
Exactly. Now let me F5. The UI looks the same, no change, but let me do a git count. 237, that was magical, right? 51 elements less than the one without app local. All you had to do was change to app local. Now let's talk about how we actually achieved it. So we do have, we're working on something called content deferral. This enables us to create optimized templates. It allows our customers to defer views in their application that is not needed until a secondary step by the user.
Well, let's pause right there. Let's see if I understand. Because, I mean, when you're building WPF stuff, your tree just gets to be huge, right? And every time you do that, you have to instantiate those things. You have to move those things. Sometimes you have to show them. Mm-hmm. What you're saying is that with app local, with WPF local, you're not loading some things.
Yes. A classic example would be disable visual of a combo box, right? Sometimes you don't really use it, right? Why would I pay the cost on apply template to create those elements? So what we have done here is for these controls you have seen, you've seen my screen, we have optimized the default templates on Aero 2, and it's loading those optimized deferred content templates. That way, it's pretty as long as we keep the element count down, that there's less layout cost, there's less frame preparation cost, less working set, and correspondingly, better app
responsiveness. So those happen to be the four controls that we were, had the lowest hanging fruit. We were able to go optimize with this new feature and basically find pop-ups that had a bunch of content or find disabled visuals and go defer them. And fundamentally, when the system asks for the element, you name the element. When it asks for the element using storyboards or get template child or find name, they'll inflate. And we'll show an example in a minute here.
It's automatic,
in the page
right? In most of the cases, you won't even have to worry about writing code to create your inflate your elements. Triggers, storyboards, animations, all of them will create it automatically for you. So that's it. It's pretty simple. It's one set of optimized templates. I'm going to turn over to Rob to show a couple of other demos.
Well, that's awesome. While we're doing that, Gary had a question. He said, your opening statement about the future of WPF was somewhat fuzzy. Hopefully, as the opening statement sort of was laid out there, it was to show clearly we're doing stuff with WPF.
Absolutely. I mean, Visual Studio is one of the largest WPF applications out there. Yeah. And you can see some of the things that Rob showed. We believe in what we are doing, and we will make sure that our own product, Visual Studio, is successful. And the kinds of things we do are, of course, influenced by our customer asks, but we also want to make sure that our own products are successful.
Absolutely. It finishes up, what can I say to management when they question spending any more development time on WPF applications? Well, I mean, if you're using Visual Studio, that's a WPF application.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
So what I was going to do is I was going to show how to use the feature for content deferral inside of an application. I have the same application over here. I'm going to take this large set of elements here inside of this grid, which is already named, it's called control grid, and I'll add an x:: element called x:defer-load-strategy, and we'll choose a value of lazy.
By the way, ignore all the squiggles and things like that. Visual Studio support is coming in the glorious future.
Yeah. Yes.
There's some tooling things that
I love the glorious
work against
future. It's my favorite
Apple
place.
Yeah.
So let's take a look at the code behind here. I've got a button that's going to just say this.findName control grid, and it's going to inflate that. So it'll start off deferred. And when code or storyboards or whatever wants it to be inflated, it'll go ahead and be inflated.
Let's pause right there. So you're saying that you're doing some deferred loading optimization a priori, and then if you want to do some more optimization for deferred loading based upon your particular application, you can just use that x:deferred.
Exactly.
Sure.
Okay.
So I went ahead and made this whole page pretty much not load. I can go ahead and get the count of elements. There's only 16 elements loaded right now. I chose a pretty big chunk to defer.
Right.
I'll go ahead and inflate them. It'll call find name. It goes ahead and takes those XAML nodes that were deferred, inflates them, and wires them up as appropriate to the named elements and other things like that. So now I can go ahead and get my count, and I have 200 plus. I've got a slightly different build with different optimizations, so it's a different number.
That's pretty amazing. So here's the question, though. Are those elements non-existent? Because someone might try to call into those elements that are deferred. What's going to happen? Things going to...
That does not exist. If you walk a visual tree, you will not find that element. That's why if you really want to talk to that element, you have to realize it first. For all intents and purposes, it's just not there for you. But internally, we do have some lightweight objects that handle it and everything. But For a customer, no.
Yeah, so right now, if you tried to use a field called control grid, it would be null until right. you call find name. So anyway, we'd love feedback. The nice thing about this is when we do ship WPF local, you'll be able to try it out, give us feedback, and we'd love to improve.
And we think the maximum gains that a customer can get is by using in his own code. Because he'll be intelligent enough to understand what parts do I need to defer rather than us doing a lot of templates, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's super useful. And this comes back to Uni's point about compatibility. We had to actually change some sequence of calls and certain controls, change themes itself. If we give it at default for everybody who's upgrading to 4.6, there's a huge chance some people will break because some people have weird code to walk into templates, inspect certain things, which no longer there anymore. So that is why this is an avenue, AppLocal is an avenue for us to release these great improvements to customers so that they have, you know, we get feedback, we can fix those compatible issues upfront.
Yeah, and also if they're not doing crazy things, this is gonna work well. But it's possible that could not work for an application.
You know, but nobody does crazy stuff with our code. I mean, everybody knows that, right? Here's a question. How does AppLocal work with third-party components? If they still reference the visuals, the usual version of WPF, will they work inside an application using AppLocal? Will it be two different versions of WPF running in the same process then?
So as long as they're not using Reflection to go load assemblies, if they go through normal binding, you know, if the IL and the third-party component is compiled against Presentation Framework 4.0.0.0, it will go ahead and use the assembly binding redirection and be redirected to the right version of the Presentation Framework. So you don't end up with two copies loaded unless a component or an application is doing funny things.
Right.
And we're looking to go ahead and investigate, you know, by injecting WPF local into a number of applications and just quickly testing them, we hope to find as many of those cases as possible and make sure that we document and mitigate as many as possible.
I mean, one of the things that Visual Studio is loading a number of third-party components and things like that, and things sort of worked fine when we
we have an exhausting.
I can imagine
right
everyone
now.
Like, everyone hold your breath.
Yes.
We're swapping out WPF. And then everyone clapped joyously like you landed someone on the moon. Here's another question. A lot of recent desktop applications are relying on mixed approach of rendering HTML-based components content with native UI elements, but the current browser control support in WPF is quite limited. Any plans for having a better support there?
Is user voice a good thing to bring up now? Or?
I guess so. I mean, if people want to talk back.
No, it's true. The particular item right now is not top of our list, but we hear this feedback quite often. So this is something that we want to go investigate, like to see what we can do better in terms of allowing people to host HTML content in a more, let's say, standards compliant way, or the latest HTML content needs to work fine in a WPF application.
Okay. You mentioned something about user voice. Is there a WPF user voice?
Yes, there is. So we have moved the WPF user voice into the Visual Studio user voice. Okay. There is a top level category in Visual Studio user voice that you can go and actually give your feedback to us.
Okay, here's another question. Is there a plan to merge both modern apps and WPF as one in the future? I'm thinking since modern apps are made to look more and more like WPF, windowing, et cetera, in Windows 10.
I mean, that's a great question. The way we think about WPF, the most immediate need for the customer is a highly performant, reliable framework that works across Windows versions, Windows 7, Windows 8, and Windows 10.
Okay.
So the kinds of things that we'll do short term are really guided by that particular principle. We want to make sure that the investments we put in work across Windows versions and work well. So that's one of the big things worth being very clear about in terms of when you talk about WPF and universal apps that work on Windows. Both are great choices, but both have their time and place. And the immediate investments you'll see and the improvements you'll see actually are guided by the principle that I just talked about before.
Wonderful. Okay, so let's talk about WPF local. We talked about some performance improvements. Are there any tooling news or things that you can tell us about tooling?
Absolutely. I mean, we can show some quick demos.
Let's do it.
And while they're switching, we can answer the next question as well.
Okay. Which one? This one?
The Visual Studio one.
Yeah.
Visual Studio uses a lot of cool and advanced controls for its shell. Do you have any plans to make them available?
I mean, the general question is, do we plan to invest in a lot of data-focused controls in WPF? I mean, short-term, the answer is no. We are still trying to do things that other people cannot. We want to make the foundation of WPF stronger, more performant, and things like that, right inside the framework. Adding new controls is not the top of our list yet. But this is something we, again, like, for example, we can do this. This is a great example of something we can do in the open as an open source project, where we can, you know, we used to have the WPF toolkit. Maybe the, it's time to sort of like reinvigorate that and add some content to it that people see is, you know, meets their requirements. But we, again, have a great third-party ecosystem. People are doing a lot of good things out there. We'll continue to sort of balance, you know, between those two. And at the same time, our highest priority would be to sort of do things that other people cannot.
Right. Another question. How is XAML being versioned these days, and are there any plans to move to XAML 2009 or another more advanced language version?
So we added some new support to XAML, as we saw with xCol and defer load strategy. In WPF, XAML 2009 is not supported in the Markov compiler. So we see it on the list in user voice with people asking. So we'll consider that over time. The runtime has support. Is there any key feature that we could add into the compiler? We have the ability to ship a new compiler with WPF local. So we'd love details on what you'd like to see.
All right, cool. All right, so tooling.
Yeah. So. People have been asking for a long time, you know, there's tools like XAML Snoop and stuff out there that allows you to, you know, inspect XAML elements, see its properties by runtime. And in this release, we take the opportunity to build that kind of tool set into Visual Studio itself. And that's the first thing I'm going to show you. So I'm taking the same stock ticker application. All I'm going to do is go to debug and say start debugging. At this point, it launches my application. I'm going to switch back to Visual Studio. You can see a couple of new windows in VS. The first one is a live visual tree, and then you have a live property explorer. What the live visual tree does, it gives you the current visual tree being displayed in the application. And it's also awesome. You can see it's like 6,745 elements on top. That is a total count of elements on the tree. If I go back to the app, and let me scroll a bit to the right, and it's a virtualized, you know, chart control. It's basically getting new elements. I switch back to VS, you can see the count is updated automatically. That means we automatically detect changes in the application and update the visual tree on the fly, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. The second thing I want to show you is, so I see an element on the screen, and it's really difficult for me to find the exact element on a big giant tree, right? I don't know where that is, at least in 8,000 elements. What I can do, I can click this button, which enables selection in the running app. I'm going to switch back to the application. As I hover over elements, you can see a nice Adorno lighting up. This tells me which element my mouse is over at that point. And using that, I'm going to quickly select this date text block. I'm going to switch back to Visual Studio. And you can see out of the 8,000 elements, we have selected the right text block for you.
That's pretty amazing. That's like the F12 tools in IE.
Exactly.
I see.
Yes. Now, let me take a look at the right. And it shows me all the properties set on that text block. Basically categorized by the source of that value. For example, if you coerce a value of a dependency property, it shows up that, hey, this property has been coerced. If it's set locally, it'll tell you it's set locally. If it's set coming from a default style, it'll tell you it's coming from default style. So the classic question of why is this button red, I can easily answer
right.
by looking at it and saying, what is a winning
inspect
property?
Inspect element almost.
Exactly. So let me switch back. And what I want to do in this date kind of looks awkward being center, so I just want to go to the left. So I'm going to switch back to VS. I'm going to walk up the tree, and I can see a data grid column header. I'm going to select that header template, change the horizontal content alignment from center to left.
Wait, so you can actually, it's like changing variables inside of Visual Studio, but now you're actually changing visual elements.
Exactly.
While you're debugging.
Yeah. I'm going to change that to left. Give it a couple of seconds for that change to, you know, persist in the application. Sorry, it just takes a little longer than usual.
It's okay. It's because it knows we're watching.
I know.
It's like my kid.
So you can see, hey, the date control is now aligned to the left. So whatever change I make in VS is instantly transferred to the running application itself. And in the future, we are thinking about things like serializing these changes back to the source. So you'll have a true XAML edit and continue experience in VS.
That's crazy. Well, okay, so that's pretty cool because now we're talking about tooling on the visual side.
Uh-huh.
And so if you ever have a problem on the visual side, obviously you can go through this and look at it live.
Yeah.
Is there any tooling to help with performance issues?
Yeah, I will come to that shortly. Just before that, we actually had to change the platform. the WPF platform to enable some of these features. For example, to know when the tree is mutating, we added new APIs to WPF. We added new APIs to get source info so that we know where the element is coming from and we can synchronize the source. So we made a bunch of changes to the platform to enable the UI debugging tools for XAML feature in VS 2015.
That's so cool. Those features are added in .NET Framework 4.6
exactly.
In order to support that. If you're targeting 4.5.1, are you still able to?
As long as 4.6 is on the machine,
you debug okay. with 4.6 okay. on the machine, yes. and you can exactly. do that. Yeah.
So. And when we do WPF local, mm-hmm. you will still be able to get the same yes. experience. And this is one of the right. challenges with bringing WPF local out there quickly. You have to make sure that all of Visual Studio tooling, not necessarily the Visual Studio shell, continues to work seamlessly with WPF local.
Of course. Yeah, that's an example right now where we do have two copies of Presentation Framework loaded, and yeah. we need to wrestle that down.
Well, we're in the awkward teenage stage. We gotta get we're gonna grow up on that.
Yeah. So let's take a quick look at another new tool. I'm gonna stop debugging. This tool is called the Timeline tool. We built that exclusively to help people troubleshoot performance issues in WPF app, especially performance issues related to UI and its interaction with network or disk and things like that. So you might have seen when I started the app, it takes quite a bit for the app to actually show up. There's this wide screen with a lot of loading. I want to figure out what's going on. I'm going to go to the debug menu, select show. Actually, let me use a different machine.
Let's go.
Yeah, so we're going to switch to a different machine. Should we answer a question?
Yeah. So there's a question here from Nick. With the .NET platform going cross-platform, are there any plans to make WPF work on Mac and Linux?
Not in the near term.
Okay. So we'll go to the next question. You mentioned performance, but not .NET Native. Is Native not an option? And further, do you see .NET Native as nowhere near completion to consider?
No. So that's a great question. I mean, .NET Native is absolutely something that we're going to bet on in terms of our Windows 10 Universal Apps. There is no way .NET apps will run on Windows 10 without .NET Native. So it's absolutely mature from that perspective. About WPF and .NET Native, that's a little bit more of an interesting conversation. The primary reason, the way I see about .NET Native is you are sort of like building the entire framework native to your application. And we talked about servicing, for example. For Windows 10 Universal Apps that are coming from the store, it's super easy to service them. You go and service the .NET Native apps in the store, and the customer gets the update. For WPF, that's not the case. Apps actually don't have sort of like a store backend
right.
to sort of go service those apps and things like that. So .NET Native, technology aside, is actually very interesting from a servicing perspective. Similarly, the kinds of apps that are there built on top of WPF, there are these large enterprise-style applications. If you run .NET Native on them, the question is, we have to learn a little bit more about the performance characteristics of those kinds of apps when you sort of think about those gigantic enterprise applications
right.
against .NET. .NET Native is a great choice right now for store type of applications, and the learnings that we'll get from there when we see that in widespread production with Windows 10, we'll actually take it and figure out what we want to do about WPF and .NET Native.
Cool. Next from John, any conversation on enabling touch support for WPF?
I don't know if we have any demos. I mean, we can certainly talk about
yeah.
them.
So we had a bunch of connect bugs for some time on WPF Touch that, hey, Touch is not being very reliable. Sometimes I'm not getting touch up events. Sometimes Touch is slow because the right event's not getting fired. So this release, we focused on fixing all those highly voted customer issues. So hopefully you'll see a better performant touch stack, a better performant and reliable touch stack in 4.6.NET. We are also considering as a part of app local to figure out whether, hey, can we get the on-screen keyboard in Windows 10 work seamlessly with the WPF stylus support. Right now, folks have to do some weird workarounds where they shut down the stylus thing and then use OSK. We want to make sure that it works very well.
But
so
if you
we're considering things like that.
Yeah, if you look at the roadmap that we published in November, the WPF team published in November, that was one of the key things was making sure we work well with modern hardware. So that,
right.
fixing issues with high DPI, touch, and other things like that.
Multi-monitor.
There's a number of those fixes coming in 4.6 already, and we're ready to attack more of those as well.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I'm gonna switch to the demo right now.
Yeah,
I have a machine set up. So same application. I'm gonna go to debug menu and say start diagnostic tools without debugging. This opens up the Performance and Diagnostics Hub in Visual Studio 2015. It shows you all the available profiling tools that can target WPF applications. For the purpose of this demo, I have the CPU usage and the new timeline tool selected. I'm going to hit start. This launches my application under Profiler. It's basically collecting a lot of data from EDW traces. You can actually take the session file, unzip it, and open in WPA if you want, which is wow. Windows Performance Analyzer. It's the same standard way that all traces are collected. So we have interoperability with other tools in Windows. So it's basically collecting a whole lot of info. I'm going to hit Stop Collection. At this point, we are processing all the performance traces in VS.
While it's processing, there's a question here about from Daniel. Will there be support for per monitor DPI?
So we're doing some fixes around that, where Visual Studio and some other applications used to have an app compat hack to kind of make it work well in that world. And we're fixing it in the platform. So as apps span across monitors, there's no black banding. So that's a good fix there. And we're also investigating what would be necessary to fully support that. So we're paying attention to the area.
Okay, a couple more. Visual Studio has improved IntelliSense for HTML development, such as Color Picker. Is there something coming up for XAML as well? There is an IntelliSense support in VS 2013. However, it's for data context in XAML. Is there a change to overcome this limitation?
Yeah, I mean, one of the big things we did in Visual Studio 2015, and I don't know if you'll see any demos, is to make our XAML language service a lot more reliable and performant. We built it on top of the .NET compiler platform, Rosslyn. It's fully integrated with the Rosslyn scenarios in VS. Our primary goal was to address the long-standing feedback on like it being fast, completely decoupled from the XAML designer. So we did that work. So I think, again, we have set the foundation for building newer experiences. Whether the color picker is a top of the item list, I'm not entirely sure, but we'll certainly see a number of new language service features now that we have like a solid foundation in VS 2015 to build on top of.
And the last one, are you going to visually update the remaining controls, such as list view date picker, to bring them in line with Windows 10 styles?
One of the top items, of course, like Scott, like Rob mentioned, was to make it such that in the local version of WPF, we make some of the items look more friendly to touch and Windows 10 look and feel. Some controls like date picker are so drastically different right now. I don't know if we'll get to the point where we'll make those look very similar to their Windows 10 versions. But this is certainly some things that we'll have to sort of like. Our primary goal would be to make sure that some of the basic controls, buttons, text box, checkbox, etc., work great with touch. Okay. So that'd be like the first thing we want to go address. And when I say work great with touch, I really mean like the touch hit targets and things like that.
Got it.
It's not just the visual look and feel. So we'll go there first, and then we'll sort of like build a backlog and go from there, across a range of controls.
Yeah. All right.
We want to make sure that WPF application, at Uni's point, have the same design language in Windows 10 as other platforms as well. So we want to make sure that we make those changes. So coming back to my profiling session, you can see that we built a couple of easy graphs for you. The first one is called UI thread utilization. It tells you where, what part of your application spend how much time on the UI thread. For example, at 100% utilization, you can see that we have broken down the utilization into parsing, layout, render, IO, and app code. We have another graph that tells you what was the frame rate of your application for both your UI thread as well as your DWM thread running in the desktop window manager. So if you take a look at it, we also generate some scenario events automatically, like application startup. This instantly tells you, without having to look at your time or stopwatch or anything, how much time it took for your application to present the first frame to Desktop Window Manager. I'm going to select the application startup, right-click, and say filter to event. So it automatically selects the part of the graph that corresponds to your performance issue. And it says that it takes around 10 seconds. And I can't really see anything in the list that takes 10 seconds. We also show things like layout. If you expand layout, we'll tell you the time cost for each element to do layout. So if you have very expensive like panels and stuff, you can quickly identify that, hey, this panel is taking a lot of time to do layout. Let me switch back to CPU usage now. In CPU usage, I can see that, hey, there is this particular main function that's taking quite a bit of time. And there is an external code here that's taking 89% of my time. When I expand that, I can instantly see it is my initialized component, sorry, not initialized component, main window underscore loaded, where most of the time is being spent in startup. I'm going to now figure out why it's taking so much time. I'm going to go back to my code, put a breakpoint. Give me a sec, it's loading. I'm going to put a breakpoint at the start of my main window loaded function.
By the way, this is exactly what the debugger team showed a couple weeks ago.
So I'm going to make it short and sweet, the demo. I'm going to hit another breakpoint for that function. Hit F5. Now it's going to launch the debugger. You can see the first breakpoint got hit right about now. I'm going to continue execution. And you can see that there is this new feature called perf tips that tell you the time that took the execution time between two breakpoints. It's pretty awesome. It instantly tells me there's something wrong with this function, and I can go fix it. I'm not going to show how to fix it. It's pretty simple. All I have to run is run different task.run on a different thread, and it's going to get fixed. But essentially, this shows you how easy it is to look at profiling information, switch back to the debugger, and using the profiling tools in the debugger to troubleshoot performance issues in your app in VS 2015.
That's pretty amazing. I mean, unfortunately, we only have 5 minutes left, but it looks like we have WPF local, right? We have performance improvements like deferred loading, et cetera. Then we also have tooling around performance to make things a little bit better. A question that's out there is, do we plan to blog about all the new features in the nice and well-explained article for people?
Absolutely. I mean, it's worth reiterating that the things that we showed, many of the things we showed today are the foundation for what we think we can build a much richer, nicer backlog.
Right.
So some of these things are still early prototypes. We hope to talk a lot more explicitly about these at Build and at Ignite. So in that time frame, we will absolutely have blog posts that describe and hopefully bits that people can go play with as well. And we'll go from there.
Fantastic. Okay, so in the last couple of minutes, anything you guys want to say about WPF?
We kind of hear this question, as I was monitoring the forum, what's the strength of the WPF team? I mean, at the end of the day, the way I think about it is we are fully invested in making this a platform that people can take a serious bet on. They can build their mission-critical apps. I mean, VS will continue to use WPF. I have no knowledge of any plans of VS moving away from WPF. It remains a great choice for building a kind of app that people are doing today. And I think they should be fully, they should be confident that we'll continue to, make it better for their scenarios. We'll listen to feedback. We will try to be as open as possible in what we do. And then hopefully we'll address all of these things that people want us to do.
Cool. Anything else you guys want to talk about?
I think Andy captured it really well.
Cool.
It's great to see all the questions. And we do want to go ahead and deliver the important ones for you.
Well, line of business applications still exist, people. And WPF is a good bet to look at it. Well, with that, we're going to finish up here. Thanks for watching. And hopefully, if you have any other questions, feel free to look these guys up or send me a message, and we'll get you answers. Again, thanks for watching, and we will see you next time.